Your 702 weekend breakfast with me, Gugs Mhlungu. Time for us to talk parenting. And it is that time of the year where there are Easter egg hunts. But this morning, we're looking at why kids love Easter egg hunts and how we can use them outside of or beyond the Easter period or Easter weekend. Joined, as always, by our resident human potential and parenting expert, Nikki Bush. Nikki, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Gugs.
Of course, Easter is a week away, which means there might be some Easter egg hunts in some homes. There might be some Easter egg hunts. There might have been Easter egg hunts at school, at some events. Why do kids love treasure hunts so much?
Mm. Yes, it's such good old-fashioned family fun. And I think treasure hunts create this warm, fuzzy memory. There's surprise. There's nothing better for children than surprise. And of course, with a treasure hunt, somebody has taken the trouble to hide things for children to find. And in many instances, it's going to be the parents who are hiding things for their children to find. And therein lies the connection, the emotional connection with a treasure hunt, is that my mum or dad actually spent some time preparing this hunt for me. So I'm not saying that children are actually consciously aware of that connection, but on a deep subconscious level, they get it. And there's that surprise, that anticipation of, I wonder where I'm going to find the treasure. So that's really what makes it so attractive to children today. And let's look at what they do online. Is being online not a kind of a treasure hunt where people are searching for information, searching for pictures, searching for ideas? Kids are searching for stuff. But what we're doing with the treasure hunt is making it three-dimensional in the real world, not in the online world. And that's also key to the excitement of the treasure hunt, that kids have to actually get up and move and go and look for things.
And so also, I imagine there's also a sense of, you know, the it lights up bits of their brains that are about reward, feeling as if, you know, you've achieved something. Because when you find it, then, you know, you've done it, especially if you're very young. And the treasure hunt is quite complex because you're not sure where everything is. I imagine they're quite big feelings of satisfaction, reward, feeling like you've won, that also make them very fun.
Yes, definitely. I think you hit on a good point there. That sense of reward is big because you're going to give your kids instructions. This is the other thing with a treasure hunt, is that there are instructions. And for very young children, or a very simple Easter egg hunt, for example, you take, you know, a box of marshmallow eggs and you hide them in the garden. The instruction is that you need to go and find eggs that look like this. And if you've got a number of children, well, maybe there's a limit to the number of eggs they can go and collect. Maybe it's 5 or 10 eggs each. Once they've got their quota in their little bag or bucket, then they're done and they have to leave it for the rest of the children to find their quota. So there is that sense of satisfaction and reward of having done it, having achieved it, having found all 5 or 10 or whatever it is that you're out to find. Or maybe it's a race to see who can get the most, which means you can add some competition to a treasure hunt as well. And the other thing is that sense of satisfaction. You know, it's good for kids to experience a sense of satisfaction. I'm not sure that it's an emotion or a feeling that kids actually understand. And we need to give them an opportunity to experience that sense of, I've done it, and my basket is full.
But also the opportunity then to have a conversation, perhaps if they don't get the most eggs or the most whatever the treasure is, maybe it's outside of Easter and there's something else that's being hunted for. Maybe they end up not being the child with the biggest basket or the basket with the most stuff. That can also be an opportunity to say, look, you didn't get all of them, or you didn't come out number one. Maybe there was a competition, but you still did really well. This was a really good effort.
Well, that raises an interesting point around competition because I think a scavenger hunt, a good old-fashioned scavenger hunt, is a form of a treasure hunt. And a scavenger hunt, which you would do for older children over the age of about 10, right through into adulthood, scavenger hunts are really exciting and can be used for parties where you divide the 15 or 20 children into groups of three or four, and it may be a scavenger hunt on foot. So think Amazing Race. People probably will, be able to identify with the Amazing Race more than the term scavenger hunt today. So the Amazing Race sets teams off on an adventure with instructions, and they don't have the full map. To begin with, they're given it piecemeal. This is the next step. These are the clues. And so you're given clues that you have to decode in order to get to the next place to pick up the next piece of treasure. And that is essentially the old-fashioned scavenger hunt. And you can do this, as I said, on foot, or you could, as I have done many times with my family, either for adult parties or for teenage parties or even those upper primary school parties, where you've got three or four children per vehicle and you rope in other parents and friends to be the drivers. Because of safety, you may not exceed the speed limit, so you have to keep it safe. But cracking the code, decoding the clues at speed and getting it right is what will help you to win or lose. And in order for it to be safe, we send our children out, or each team out, at intervals. So 5 or 10 minute intervals between each car departing, so that they're never directly in competition. They don't ever see each other on the route. And so there are no, car chases and screaming down the highway to beat each other. That's not the intention. It's the cleverness of cracking the code, decoding the clues, and getting it right. And of course, then when you get back to base camp, you have to produce all the stuff that you've collected to prove that you have done what you needed to do in order to fulfill the challenge.
And so the other thing that that seems to be quite a big, perhaps unintended benefit of these kinds of activities, whether it is a scavenger hunt or a treasure hunt, and we've spoken about this quite a lot, is A, it is quite tactile. We've spoken about the importance of, tactile learning for kids, but also requires them to focus. They have to give or provide deliberate focus, and you can't look at your screen, you can't look at your phone, you can't look at an iPad. You need to talk to the people around you and or look at the map if there is a map. And it also sounds like often, overwhelmingly, it will require outside time. So all of the things we often say are really, really good for kids, that tactile hands-on learning, but also engaging, a different part of their brain that's not a screen. Also seem to be these unintended benefits of engaging kids in these hunts.
Definitely. You've mentioned the reward part of the brain lighting up, and now we're talking about movement, which lights up different parts of the brain, problem solving, which is critical thinking, lighting up another part of the brain. Then, of course, we've got the tactile, which is, for example, here's a nice tactile situation where for a preschooler, you could, and do this, please, because it's so lovely even for adults. Go and buy yourself a big bag of lentils, pour it into a big bowl, and just feel, put your hands, both hands in the bowl, and just mush these dried lentils around. It's the most beautiful sensory experience. Now you can create a treasure hunt within the bowl. So you can hide little things inside the bowl. And for a preschooler, I would find one of their games that's got wooden or plastic shapes in it. And I would put the wooden or plastic shapes into that bowl of lentils. And then you can even blindfold them. So talk about sensory here. If they know their shapes, you can blindfold them, and now through the sense of touch only, they have to find you the triangle or the circle or the square. And there are clues here as well, because a triangle has three sides and three points. A circle has no straight sides and no corners. A square versus a rectangle has got four even sides and four corners, whereas a rectangle has two long sides and two short sides. So can you see how hugely sensory it is, and how you're connecting different parts of the body and the brain in order for your child to use the clues to find what you're wanting them to find without being able to see it?
Mm.
So you are, in essence, becoming a source of magic, wonder, and surprise in a very simple way. It's so easy to create fun out of nothing if you actually listen to what I'm saying.
And also the idea of kids learning to work together or work with other people, that also sounds as if it's a really great way, not just to bond with, friends or classmates, but even siblings in a home. Because sometimes those relationships can be just a little bit difficult. They can be, or maybe there's an age gap between them, and so they don't spend as much time doing the same activities. But the great thing with the hunt is everyone can do it. The parents can do it, the grandparents can do it, the kids can do it. And so there's a really great way, it sounds like a really great way to bring kids together, especially if they don't spend a lot of time with each other.
Yes. I love watching kids come together and families come together over treasure hunts, because it can become a team activity, like we were saying with the scavenger hunt or an amazing race. And it's playful, you know, and I think that's the thing that in our very busy lives, we actually forget about being playful. And for children, play is the language of childhood, and a treasure hunt makes everybody step into that playful zone. So here's a lovely idea for creating a team activity around a treasure hunt. So you could have children of all ages and parents playing together, where you take, say you've got children in preschool as well as primary school children. You could take a 24-piece giant floor puzzle. So they're these big pieces that are probably approximately sort of 7 to 10 centimeters, if they were a square, like a 7 by 7 or a 10 by 10. So big pieces. And you can show your children which puzzle they come from. So you can show them the picture of the puzzle. You could hide those puzzle pieces around the room, around the house, around the garden. Obviously, whoever's hidden them needs to know where they hid them in case one piece gets lost and nobody finds it. But it's a great thing to do. I love doing a puzzle scavenger hunt around the house where everybody is working together to collect all 24 pieces. Then they come together with all of their treasure. And now as a team, they have to build the puzzle to completion. You could do this with a 24-piece floor puzzle. You could do it with a 48-piece smaller puzzle that would take longer and is more difficult for older children. And then they work together to create this puzzle. What a beautiful moment, you know, and look how much time it's taking. So one of the problems that parents have with children is they're always saying they're bored.
Mm.
How do we get children to be more engaged actively in creating their own fun, not being entertained by a screen, and spending time doing stuff? So this, you know, going to find things is going to take 10 or 15 minutes max, depending on how many things they have to find. Then they have to come back and put it together. So we've probably taken a good half hour, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And that gets children from one place in time to the next, and they will experience themselves having fun, excitement, not being bored, racing, competing, laughing, getting confused, getting lost. You know, a whole lot of different things, which is very good for them.
And I'm so glad you mentioned being confused and getting lost, because even that, I think, takes a bit of time. because, you know, you have to figure the thing out, whether it is, where is the item? How do I read the map? What does this clue mean if you're doing a sort of Amazing Race type game? And even that is going to keep your kids entertained. It's going to keep them occupied because now they need to kind of figure it out. And if you as a parent say, well, you know, you have to figure it out, I'm not going to figure it out. And in the end, when they do, there's that, you know, I did it. There's that, again, that reward and also a boost for their self-confidence that they worked through a difficult and confusing thing. So allowing kids to be confused and a little bit lost and allowing them to figure it out.
Yes, so it's a good thing to do if your child gets very lost, and you know, eventually you might have either one frustrated child, or maybe they're coming stone cold last. In other words, they're really slower than everybody else. With that child, or maybe it's a much younger child in amongst a bigger group, then you can use the hotter colder strategy, where you can give them a little bit more focus and attention, where you can say you're getting hotter, hotter, hotter because you're getting closer to the treasure, or no, you're very, very, very cold at the moment, you go in a different direction. So children respond quite well to the hotter, colder strategy. And I want to add another lovely story here. I watched older children, and these were young teenagers on a holiday in the bush, actually planning a scavenger hunt for the younger children. And they wrote out clues. They hid things around on the patio and at the base of a tap and under the big thorn tree, etc. And they wrote clues to direct the children, the younger children, to go and fetch things. Now, there's a different kind of satisfaction where the older children had to creatively map out this treasure hunt. And the satisfaction when they saw the younger children having such fun, everybody won. Everybody experienced that huge sense of satisfaction at the end of the day. It was really beautiful to watch, Googs.
And so the concept of the treasure hunt is not then just for Easter. I mean, they're great now, especially because it is also school holidays, and I imagine parents are looking for things to entertain the kids with, but also the kind of thing that you can use regularly. You can have it as one of your tricks to keep the kids entertained, to keep them, you know, get them out of the house if, you know, they've been in the house for very long. So it's not just a thing to be used over the next couple of days, over the Easter period.
Absolutely right. There's so many different ways to apply the treasure hunt concept. So if you want to do a big family adventure where you have to go walking or driving in the car, you can go and do geocaching. So just Google geocaching, geocaching. There are millions of geocaches around the world. So it's a hide and seek using GPS coordinates. It's a global phenomenon, and there are millions. When I say millions, 2-3 million geocaches around the world. And each little cache or hiding place consists of a watertight container in an interesting location. So behind a rock or a stone, or underneath a railway track somewhere, or in behind a graveyard, you know, they're always in interesting places. And that little container is filled with tiny treasures, whether they're sweets or, you know, all these things that kids collect, the checkers little shop, you know, all those tiny miniatures, things like that, all these crazes that children have. You hide these knickknacks in the cache. And then when other people come to your, because you can start your own cache. It could be a yogurt container or a little ice cream container. You fill it with treasure. And then when other people find your cache, they take a piece of treasure out, but they have to replace it with another piece. Mm-hmm. So families can become geocache hunters where they remove a treasure as long as they replace it with something else. And it's super fun because you've got to also go online and work out the coordinates to get to where you need to go. And my sister and her family have great fun with their kids doing geocaching. So I think that's a fun thing to do wherever you may find yourself. And then, you know, Let's just talk about the fact that it's really hot in Joburg right now. You might not want to put marshmallow eggs out in a hot garden. just because they might melt. So you might have to use other things as something to collect and come and exchange for those Easter eggs.
Mm.
So maybe it's those gambling tokens, you know, poker tokens, those plastic poker chips. You could hide those around the garden, or you could just tear up white pieces of paper into squares and hide the pieces of paper around the garden. And then children collect the paper, pieces of paper, and then they come and exchange those for the Easter eggs. So let's understand we're going through a massive heat wave at the moment. So it may not be, unless it's a very early morning treasure hunt, appropriate to put chocolate in the garden right now.
Nikki, as always, it's great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
That's a great pleasure, and I hope our parents really enjoy planning those treasure hunts for their children.
That's our resident human potential and parenting expert, Nikki Bush.